what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 107. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
This is Lieutenant John Triton.
Wow.
Nicely done.
That was an honor of our guests this week.
Yay, I'll my brother's here. Woo!
Marty's back.
Woo! Marty!
It's my wife.
Oh, it's Marty. Hi. And my very special friend, Elise.
Has Yay! Joined.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Wow, yeah, and we're not talking about, like, the hottest women or men in cinema or anything like that.
We learned our lesson.
Good Lord, did we?
Yep.
All right, this week
we suffer for our art.
Yeah, boy. No, everyone else suffered for our art that time.
That's
around.
Right.
All right, let's go ahead and talk about what we watched this week. Barry, why don't you go ahead and kick it off?
Went and looked at one of my favorite Bill Murray films, Quick Change. Have you seen this one?
Yes.
It's one of my favorites. It's the word everybody throws out. It's low-key. It's not Ghostbusters, but it's so funny. It's total character-driven comedy. I love it. It's one of the great underrated movies that he did right after Quick Change, which was a total flop. He went and did What About Bob and Groundhog Day, kind of got his bearings back. But I love Quick Change. I think it's one of his best. Saw Billy Elliot, which is like one of these movies that like Americans love those kind of art house movies, because it's one of those British movies that are like so cute and you can take the whole family to. It's about this little boy whose father wants him to be a boxer, but he decides he wants to be a ballet dancer. Total cheese fest. It's kind of like the Full Monty for kids. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really just nothing.
How does that exactly?
I don't really care for it. I don't think there's anything to it.
Wasn't it rated R?
It's rated R, and it's like full of foul language, but it feels like a family movie. That's the weird thing, because it takes place in Ireland. There's all this stuff about these strikes going on, so like there's all this gritty subtext, and then meanwhile there's like the little boy learning ballet. So I don't know who the movie was for, but it just wasn't for me. And then Simpatico. I got to talk about this one briefly. It just kind of proved to me that Sam Shepard's plays just don't make good movies. Simpatico stars Jeff Bridges, Sharon Stone, Nick Nolte, and Catherine Keener, and I can't recommend it. It's just such a weird, listless movie. The only part of it I'll always remember, there's a scene in the movie where Sharon Stone shoots a horse in the face. That will always stay with me. Otherwise, like, I couldn't even tell you what it's about. It's just a totally forgettable movie, so... Finally, House Party. House Party turns 20. This Wednesday. Yeah,
I feel old. Dude.
Well, for me, it's cause to celebrate, because I threw it on last night, and it's funnier than I even remember. I mean, I freaking love House Party. It holds up really well. Marty and I grew up on it. It's a beautiful film. It's stylish. It was a really important film when it came out 20 years ago. You know, it was like right after, you know, Spike Lee was kind of monopolizing the field, and all of a sudden, like, all these other African American filmmakers came out, like Reginald Hudlin with House Party, and then Mary Yvonne Peebles with New Jack City, and John Singleton with Boys in the Hood, and so on and so forth. And House Party is just, it's so sweet at its core. It's a really sweet movie, and it's got Robin Harris, who steals the movie as the father. Then, you know, whenever Kid and Play are dancing, you can't go wrong. It's just a fun movie. It really holds up so well.
Very cool.
That's it for me.
Ethan, you want to go next?
Yeah, I watched a bunch of stuff this week, but I'm only going to talk about two of them. I revisited Billy Madison for the first time in a while. Holds up.
Nice.
Still like the penguin appearances?
Oh, that, man. Any time Sandler does one of his voices, I...
Stop looking at me, Schwan!
I just lose my shit whenever he does that. I cannot take... It's probably one of the best dumb comedies ever made. I miss kind of the anarchy of those 90s Sandler comedies. Now they're just so middle of the road, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Okay.
Let's take a moment to reminisce about our favorite Adam Sandler comedies.
Happy Madison for me.
Happy what? Gilmore.
Gilmore.
Happy Gilmore.
That's the name of his company. Mm, yes. Sorry, yeah. Happy Gilmore. That's my favorite of his, like, his early stupid movies.
Yeah. That's mine, too.
Love it.
Bob Barker.
Bob, yeah. Yeah.
I gotta represent the artsy fartsy punch drunk love.
Oh, well, if you're gonna go there.
Oh, no, but comedy wise, I'd have to go with Billy Madison, too. It's so retarded, but hilarious.
Although The Wedding Singer is special, too.
Wedding Singer's great.
Yeah, that's fun. That's
I hated The Waterboy. I can never get behind The Waterboy.
You hated The Waterboy?
I hated The Waterboy.
What?
You've offended Ethan.
Sorry, Ethan. Nah, I just other than like the Roy Orbison tattoo, there was nothing in it that made me laugh.
That's all I remember from that movie too.
didn't laugh that he had the same Spider-Man bed sheets that I had when I was 5.
I didn't know what kind of sheets you had when you were 5, but thanks for the personal information, sir. All right, and was that all you wanted to
One more thing. Yeah. I watched this little movie called Old Dogs.
Oh, man.
Why did you watch that?
Well,
did you lose a bet?
No, there's just been this humongous cult surrounding the movie on the internet, like the Tumblr account facesofolddogs.com and such. And I'm like, okay, I gotta watch this movie. And I can say it's probably worse than Transformers 2, but I didn't hate it as much for two reasons. One, it's an hour shorter. Two, I was really baked when I watched it. So,
all right, then.
Isn't Bernie Mac in it?
Yeah, and he's in it for one scene, and it's maybe the most bizarre thing I've ever seen, where they need Robin Williams needs help to spend time with his kids, so they enlist Bernie Mac, who's like this puppeteer, and he like sets this up, this thing up where like Robin Williams is a human puppet, and like John Travolta's in like this motion capture technology, like making him do certain movements and stuff. It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen in any movie ever.
Makes me want to see it now.
And there's this other scene where the kids do something zany, and they switch around all their pills, and they take all these pills, and they're drugging out, and John Travolta, his like face is frozen, and it's like this weird CGI effect on his face, like he's Two-Face almost, and he's just smiling and stuff, and he's drinking, and water's falling out. I'd say it's like maybe one of the most insane movies I've ever seen. Like this Walt Becker guy, he may just be a genius on the level of Louis Buñuel and David Lynch. I almost appreciate it in a Freddy Got Fingered kind of way, but yeah, it's, and there's this other scene where Rita Wilson's in it, and she slams her fingers in on a trunk, and they make a whole comedic set piece out of it, set to the song "Big Girls Don't Cry."
Oh,
and
my
the whole thing is just so. It's just so wrong in every way. It's like, it's a vile, disgusting piece of film, but it's creative, you know?
Man, I really want to see it now.
I'd say it's the Bad Boys 2 of family comedies.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Interesting.
That's ruined me for the day. Okay, would either of you like to chime in with anything at all? You don't have to. It's okay.
I can't think of anything I've seen recently, but did you... No,
it's okay. All right. That's all right. I'll just go through mine real quick. Still watching Supernatural. This show is getting geekier by the episode. There's an episode near the end of the second season where it's a werewolf episode. They always have to con their way into, you know, going to the crime scenes or wherever. And this time, since it was a werewolf episode, their monkey ears were Detective Dante and Detective Landis, which just made me giggle for like 5 minutes.
It made me very happy.
But it's a really good show. I'm having a lot of fun with it.
What season are you on?
We just started season 3.
Man.
So I think we'll be caught up by the end of the
month. You're just booking through this thing.
Pretty much. Yeah. It's a really good show. I picked up Wreck on DVD this week. It's such a freaking good movie.
It's a good film. Yeah, very well done.
Love that movie. Revisited The Mist on Blu-ray. This time I watched the color version because I'd only seen the black and white.
Oh, you've only seen the black and white. Okay.
And I kind of agree that the black and white's kind of like a throwback to the 50s and 60s, but the color feels like a 70s horror movie.
Yeah.
Really interesting.
Yeah. And I feel like that's the kind of genre it should fit into, because like it's too gritty and disturbing for a 50s like The Blob kind of movie, in my opinion. But I think I
still like the black and white cut better.
Really?
Yeah,
it's definitely like moodier, and no question. I mean, the whole the moral play that comes into play. I mean, it plays better in black and white with Marcia Gay Harden's crazy character. And
yeah. And then finally, I watched the movie that will hopefully be giving us the best actor for 2009. I watched Crazy Heart, and that was really good.
I love that film.
I wasn't surprised. I wasn't expecting to like it that much.
Yeah, because like, I mean, I think I told you this. When I went and saw it, there was some buzz in the theater that like, well, Bridges is good, but the movie is really forgettable and expendable. From the first scene where he gets out of his truck, and he's got that, you know, the carton full of his urine.
Yeah.
It's like, to me, all the details felt right. Or like when he's sneaking out of that one night stands room and he like pauses to like steal the booze as he's like tiptoeing out of there. It felt honest and real to me. You know, and the whole notion that he's like so ticked of like having to perform in these nasty beer of these bars and like how he goes and vomits in between the sets. Like during the set, it felt really uncomfortably real to me. And I loved his performance. I honestly forgot I was watching Jeff Bridges for 2 hours. And Colin Farrell, what a surprise.
No kidding.
Like, I didn't know he was in it. And B, like, at first I thought, oh, great, this is when the movie's really not going to work. But like, he totally sold me on his character.
Absolutely. I love the part at the beginning when he's dogging on Pueblo. I don't know why, but...
A
That's
right. Well, there's like his character reminded me of like a Travis Tritt or like a, you know, like a Clint Black or like a really popular sex symbol cowboy singer.
Yeah. Way past his prime.
What,
but yeah.
What about the comparisons to the wrestler? Does that ring true? Or?
Yes, absolutely. That's what I thought. It's like,
I think it's a lot less depressing, though, than the wrestler.
Oh, yeah, it's more uplifting. I mean, it has a more hopeful ending, I thought.
Yeah.
But it reminded me of that, though. Kind of like, you know, this guy who's like used to be big, and now he's like hit total bottom, and it's like his painful climb back to the top. But
it's like the wrestler minus the steroids.
Yeah, and Mickey Rourke, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Marissa Tomei.
Okay, and strippers.
But Gyllenhaal was good. Didn't you think Gyllenhaal was good?
She was, surprisingly. Like, I was like, why was she nominated? And then I watched the movie. And,
yeah.
Okay.
She's been really hot and cold for me, but I liked her in that film. I thought she was real vulnerable.
Yes, definitely.
She looks like a sad cartoon turtle, though.
Aw.
I'm imagining that. I'm going, aw. That is Maggie Gyllenhaal, a sad totally. Cartoon turtle.
Wow. Okay, well, let's go ahead and talk about what hit theaters this past weekend.
Well, currently at number 6 for the top opening of all time. You heard this?
Yeah.
What was it, $116 million? Yeah. Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland. And then opening at number 2 with $13 million, like the billionth opening, biggest opening of all time, Brooklyn's Finest with Wesley Snipes, Richard Gere, and Ethan Hawke.
That looks interesting, though.
I've heard very mixed things. I was telling Marty and Elise, I was reading this review this morning in USA Today, and apparently there's a scene in the movie, Richard Gere has a hooker girlfriend, and she gives him a present where it's a watch, and inscribed in the watch is a lyric from a Boy George song, and the movie never explains why.
Okay.
And they didn't say what Boy George song was, so now I'm like,
do you really want to hurt me?
Or, yeah. I'm a karma chameleon, or
who knows?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, shall we talk some Alice in Wonderland then?
Yeah.
Sorry, before you get on, it just makes me think of in Commando when Arnold's like, why don't they just call him Girl George?
He actually says that?
Yeah, in Commando.
Sweet. I haven't seen Commando like since the 80s. I'll have to see that.
They play like every day on AMC.
Yes, look, because that is an American movie classic.
I hate AMC. They're like,
I would agree.
Every time I turn AMC, they always have like Poltergeist 3 or Predator 2 on.
Well, man, Jamaicans and cocaine, man. Jamaicans and cocaine.
Wow. All right, Alice in Wonderland.
Alice in Wonderland.
And then I'll talk about the Tron trailer later, because, wow. Alice in Wonderland, what did you think of this? Because you're more of a Tim Burton fan, actually. I want to get your take before I get in on it.
Oh, Dave, I didn't like it.
You didn't?
No, it's probably my least favorite Burton movie, honestly.
Interesting.
I thought, you know, visually beautiful. The effects can never go wrong. But what's that girl's name? What is her name? Mia. Hold on one second. What is her name?
Mama Mia?
It is Mia Mia Wasikowska, who played Alice. I thought she was robotic. I thought she had the same inflection for every single line. She seemed so disinterested. She didn't seem even remotely, I mean, because they make a big deal that she's been there before, but she doesn't remember for reasons that are really never that interesting. And like, she doesn't seem remotely amazed that there's like a talking rabbit or like a caterpillar that's talking to her. You know, she doesn't seem remotely. It reminded me of like Mark Wahlberg in Planet of the Apes. It's like, where's the surprise? I thought it was just joyless and heartless. I was not engaged in it at all. I didn't care about anything that went on. It reminded me a lot of The Golden Compass, a lot of it. There's even a scene in the movie where she's riding the back of this big beast and she's riding astride. I'm like, man, that's like right out of The Golden Compass. And for me, it was the same deal where the special effects were awesome, but I didn't care about anyone or anything that happened. Depp, you know, I think it's kind of predictable at this point casting him as the Mad Hatter, but like,
I thought it was a unique take on that Mad Hatter, though.
It was unique, but I felt like it's almost predictable that he's going to do something whimsy and offbeat and off-kilter because it's Johnny Depp. But like, I felt it was like one of his least focused performances. I felt like the character was still in the workshop stage. Like, he was still trying to figure it out. Because, I mean, he does like different voices and different character ticks, but it didn't feel like, I mean, like a Jack Sparrow or an Ed Wood where there was like, I just felt like he was just trying things. It didn't feel like it was like a solid character yet. I thought Helena Bonham Carter was annoying. I love the March Hare, but like my favorite parts of the movie reminded me of the animated film. You know, they're like right out of the animated movie, and it just made me wish I was watching the animated movie.
So you didn't like when Depp took the Mad Hatter to that really dark place the few times that he did it?
I like little moments, but to me, like the first hour of it went by so quickly. Like they didn't linger on anything long enough. Like you see the caterpillar, you see the tea party, but like it was like over really quick. It went from one set piece to another. And like I was telling Marty and Elise, I hate that the movie has Crispin Glover and Johnny Depp together, two of our most original and interesting American actors, and they give them nothing to do. Nothing. They've got that one scene together, and it's like, oh, come on, like, at least give them something to say to each other. They're so, like, we're talking to, like, definitive actors, like, in terms of, like, being kind of crazy and offbeat and, like, taking chances, and, like, they don't do anything interesting.
Interesting.
I didn't like the film.
And I did.
My least favorite Tim Burton movie. I like The Apes better.
Wow.
Wait, well, ooh. Barry, you were describing it as what? As heartless, cold, uninvolving, and what else?
Did I say soulless?
Yes, you did.
Okay,
oh,
soulless.
Wait, are you describing every single Tim Burton movie ever made?
Wow. Even I won't go there.
In the past, he's been accused of, like, being style over substance, but, like, this to me, like, to me, this fits that, honestly, because I always said, like, no, in the past, the style was the substance, but for me, this is all flash.
Well, Ed Wood and Pee-wee are classics.
Ed Wood and Pee-wee, you know, I get behind the original Batman and Nightmare Before Christmas, but, yeah, I can't get behind this one. I really can't. The more I thought about it, like, it's one of these movies, like, the more I think about it, the least I like it.
Wow.
So
okay.
The less I like it, sorry.
I kind of dug this. So the reason I didn't have a problem with Alice not being freaked out by seeing, you know, talking cats and stuff was because, you know, I thought they kind of set up in the beginning that her dad kind of, you know, taught her, you know, dream big and,
right.
You know, anything can happen. So that's why I took that as that. But I really like this a lot more than you did.
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
I was bored with the beginning. I was like, come on, get to Wonderland. I thought the setup was so dull and stodgy. It was like a Masterpiece Theater. And then once she gets home, it's like, we don't care about this. Like, we don't care about, like, you know, her going on the ship. And no, I just wanted to go home. I was angry.
Wow.
I was so disappointed.
I think Helena Bonham Carter was supposed to be annoying. In the first place.
And she succeeded
quite well.
Brilliantly.
Yeah. Not in an Umbridge from Harry Potter kind of way, but still really annoying and someone you love to hate.
Yeah.
I didn't have a problem with Alice. I mean, sure, she didn't knock it out of the park or anything, but I think she did a decent job. Mm. I really dug Johnny Depp in this. And it was because it wasn't doing Willy Wonka minus the Carol Channing impression. It was because there was a little bit of depth there. The spots when he actually did go to that dark place with the character, you know, when he gets that gruff Irish broke going. I really
was it Scottish
it.
Or Irish?
Either
I couldn't
or.
Tell. Yeah. Like, I don't even know
same
if he
thing.
Knew. I really felt like he was letting the makeup do most of the acting for him, though. Like, I don't know. I just didn't feel like he didn't get to bust loose with his character enough. I mean, I know it's a supporting character and it's an ensemble piece, but I still felt like this just isn't one of his stronger performances, even for Burton.
Now, I'm not going to say this is an amazing movie, but I liked it. And one thing I hated, I will say outright, the 3D sucked.
Yeah.
There are parts where it is 3D. I said this in our Wild 105 review. It's 3D, but in a Viewmaster kind of way, where it's like, you know, they like layer flat pictures because they shot it in 2D, and it's just painfully obvious when they do that. And I was on the JonesJones.net podcast, and it actually just posted today, and they were talking about 3D and how it's always going to jump stuff out at you. And I actually defended 3D to a point because, you know, Battle for Terra, the Nightmare Before Christmas. A lot of these 3D movies use the 3D to set it as a stage, as opposed to having stuff jump out at you.
Yeah,
I closed my eyes halfway through her falling down the rabbit hole.
Yeah,
because stuff kept flying and flying. I was getting a headache. I'm like, enough of this already. It has no business being in 3D at all whatsoever. I liked the world in general. I liked Alan Rickman as the caterpillar.
Sure.
I think there's a bit to like. It's odd. I'm finding myself on the other end of the general consensus.
On the side of a Tim Burton film. Dave, what has happened?
I know. What the heck? But, you know, the real reason? Oh, go ahead.
I'm sure Tim Burton will rebound with his IMAX 3D Captain Crunch adaptation starring Johnny Depp and Helen Bonham Carter. So.
Well, here he's doing Dark Shadows next, which I'm hoping for.
No, he'll do Captain Crunch. He'll have this Captain Project set up and then, like, Warner Brothers or Disney will slip in a check and be like, no, do Captain Crunch. And it'll be like, okay. And, you know,
you make him sound like a whore, Ethan.
Hot topic and, yeah.
But it'll be the dark and soulless version of Captain Crunch that we all fear. The Captain Crunch in all of us. I don't know.
Wow, that was disturbing.
That cereal is never going to be the same for me again.
Okay, let's be real. Here's why you go see Alice in Wonderland in 3D. So you can see the frickin' Tron trailer. Because holy crap, was that awesome.
Yeah, boy, did I get jacked there. But go ahead, Dave. Tell us about how much you love the Tron trailer. Please, go ahead.
They weren't even supposed to show it. I got embargoed on a trailer. That's the first time that's ever happened to me.
I got totally jacked on a trailer. I got The Prince of Persia because I saw it in 2D. So
you got Jake Gyllenhaal goodness.
I did. Lots of Gyllenhaal.
I'm so sorry. You know, what I like is the fact that they're setting up this up as a direct sequel. They're kind of taking the story from the video game, Tron 2.0.
Oh, yeah.
Except that Alan has taken over NCOM, Flynn's gone disappearing, and Alan gets a call, calls Alan like 2 days ago from a number at Flynn's arcade that's been disconnected for 20 years. His son goes and looks for him, finds this computer lab, gets zapped into the computer, and the computer world looks awesome.
That's cool that there's all this exposition you're telling me about, because like I expect it to be just slam bang visuals. I love that they're no, there's a story here. That's
absolutely
great.
Absolutely. Yeah, and they actually, they didn't show the Light Cycle trailer before they said Tron Legacy. I'm like, I would have liked to see it, but they showed the redesign on the Recognizer and it looks so cool. But then after the title card comes up, they showed some of the Light Cycle and it looks like they've expanded even on the Comic-Con footage.
Nice.
I'm really looking forward to this. This is like my most look forward to movie of the year.
Was there applause in the theater or?
Yes, there was.
Was it just you? Or?
No. There's about 20 people that did, and then I clapped and
then you
was happy. Yeah.
Just Dave. Yay, Fletch won!
No, although I have to, it is worth noting that Steph made fun of me almost the entire drive home because my jaw was dropped during the entire trailer because I was
so
such
you
a
completely
happy.
Forgot about Alice. You're like, it's all about Tron.
The first 10 minutes, I'm like, what, Alice? What? I'm watching a movie. Dang it. Yeah.
Were there, and did you hear any fat beats from Daft Punk in the
yes.
trailer?
Yes. And I cannot wait to hear this full soundtrack. It's, yeah.
So when am I going to see this thing, Dave? When's it going to be online?
I don't know. I was figuring
why
it'd be online
film
by today.
Why don't you film it for me? Just take your little camera phone. They'll never catch you.
I don't have a camera phone.
Oh, okay.
I have an old phone for work that doesn't have a camera on it. Yeah, oh, okay. I know. I'm a nerd. All right, let's talk about what hit DVD this week we're almost a half hour in.
DVD this week. Let's see. The Oscar nominated Up in the Air. The unfortunately Oscar nominated Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire. I hate saying that title. And then the rest is all winners. We got the aforementioned Old Dogs with John Travolta and Robin Williams.
Yay!
Yay! The Boondock Saints 2, All Saints Day.
Mm.
Mm. Dwayne Johnson, Planet 51. Remember this one?
Wow.
No one remembers this one. Yeah.
No one. Speaking of which, this movie flopped in its native country and in America, Pirate Radio. My dad loved
that
movie.
I liked that movie.
Yeah, like I know people who loved it, but like I don't know anybody who saw it.
I
want to
see the British cut.
You saw it. Yeah, we saw it. And you liked it.
I did. I loved it.
Okay.
That's great.
I want to see the British cut of The Boat That Rocked. I mean, that's the original title.
Yeah, which is a great title.
They edited it for the U.S. version, I know.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, they chopped it up.
Oh, not cool. All right. And then we got Michael Moore, Capitalism, A Love Story. Does anybody care about Michael Moore anymore?
No.
Although Will Schifflebein actually interviewed him like in the last week or so.
Yeah.
Over, I think it was at GordonandtheWhale.com.
Okay.
It was a pretty interesting interview.
Because I need to see Sicko. I've heard Sicko's really good.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Did you guys see Capitalism or?
No.
No.
No. No.
No. NFL Super Bowl champion video. This is like.
Yippee.
That was so 2 weeks ago. Greek Chapter 4.
Okay.
And then what we got? The Scarecrow and Mrs. King, Season 1, Bruce Boxleitner.
Yes.
Yep. Hachi, A Dog's Tale, starring Richard Gere. This got an A- from EW. They said it was like one of the big sleepers of the year. It looks like Richard Gere doing a one-man Marley and Me. You've been warned. The Stoning of Soraya M. Do you remember this one? This
no.
is with Jim Caviezel. It's the one about the woman who gets buried up to her neck in sand and they stone her to death.
Aww.
With rocks, I mean. You know, it's not like in a boulder sense. But it was very controversial. It was in theaters for like 5 seconds. I remember this show as a kid on the USA Network, Silk Stocking, Season 1. Remember that show?
I think this is a re-release of it because it came out a few months ago.
Oh, it did?
Yeah, I think
so. Oh, where was I?
I don't know.
Oh, man.
Go but yeah, it. I remember that show was so bad.
Yeah, it was terrible. I mean, it was like something like
it was a precursor to USA Up All Night.
Exactly.
Much,
it was
yeah.
like a, yeah, it was like it was too tame for Showtime, but it was just right for USA. Tremors, the complete season.
Yeah,
yeah. But isn't Matt Gross in it? The dad from Family Ties, isn't he like the only?
I think
he's like
so.
The star of it, right?
I think so.
Because like you know Fred Ward and Kevin Bacon, of course, they're like screw that. Matt Houston, Season 1.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the Fall Guy, but another version of it. Yeah, I know.
So it's like the life of a stuntman.
Or was it? No, or no, maybe it was. No, I think he may. No, I think he lived in Houston. He was like a rich oil man who solved crime. I may have gotten him mixed up.
A rich
with the Fall
oil
guy.
Man who sells, and his name is Matt Houston.
Yeah,
high concept.
Not Daniel Plainview.
I drink from your milkshake.
And then finally, a cult film I've never seen. I think you saw this, Tapeheads, with Tim Robbins and. And
there's some funny stuff. It doesn't work all the way through, but there's some hilarious like.
Okay, I've always
pieces.
Wanted to see it.
It's just fun to see them do stuff together. Like I wish Tim Robbins still did comedy because he's pretty hilarious.
It's kind of like I wish Tim Hanks still did comedy.
Well, Tom Hanks, yeah.
Tom Hanks. Sorry, I took a nap before you guys came over.
Okay. No, you're totally right. Hanks does the stuff like the important films, you know,
and mullet drama.
And mullet drama?
Mullet mystery.
Is that what you referring to the Robert Langdon movies now?
Nice. So you should definitely take a note from his wife and do another old dog.
Wow.
That's it for DVD releases.
All right. Let's go ahead and talk a little bit of news.
Yeah.
Even though my brain totally hurts now. All right. What have you got this week, Ethan?
Nothing.
Oh, okay. Sweet. Have you got anything, Barry?
They're bringing back Police Academy, which doesn't make me happy, even though it should. Because it's probably going to be better than any of the like the last four Police Academy movies, really.
Are you hoping that they'll respect the legacy of the franchise that is Police
Academy? That's the thing. This is like when they said they were going to remake Friday the 13th. I'm like, oh, I hope it's good. But it's like, they've never been good. These movies have always been bad. So,
But you know who's going to be back, I bet. Michael Winslow.
Oh, yeah. You know he'll do it. Winslow will be back. Trying to think.
What's Gutenberg doing?
Yeah, exactly. Gutenberg, I'm sure he'll be like a bit of like Police Academy Next Generation, where he'll be like the captain now, and he'll like, you know, be like a new generation of wacky recruits. And
how could it possibly go wrong?
Dark and gritty reboot here.
Where the entire original cast gets killed in the first 5 minutes and then
Straight face to Police Academy.
Bobcat needs work.
He's a director now.
Yeah, he directed World's Greatest Dad. It's awesome.
That'd be cool if he directed the Police Academy reboot. That would almost be promising, but I mean, do people even like those kind of movies? I mean, it's so slapsticky, you know. Like we're into like gross out humor now, you know.
Oh,
like,
you think that they're not going to adapt that in there? You know they're going to.
Yeah, it just like for me, like Police Academy was always for kids. Like it started off as an R-rated movie, and then it, you know, each one got tamer and tamer. But by the time it got to like the fifth and the sixth one, it was all like, you know, guys getting kicked in the crotch and.
Sounds a lot like Old Dogs.
I gotta see that.
It's like RoboCop 3.
Exactly. Right. Went from being like prestigious to flying RoboCop.
To jetpacks, yes.
Yeah, ninjas and
I forgot about the ninjas.
Yeah, do you remember like we sent our ninja to take care of RoboCop? That's a line from the movie.
You're like, what? Wow. Okay, I guess that just hurt. All right, I'll just read out two pieces of news. Apparently Tim Burton has another project that he's going to produce, not direct. He's going to be producing the Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter movie.
Too soon. This book just hit the shelves.
Well, Natalie Portman's already involved in the Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Yeah, but that's been out for like, what, 5 years now? Like, at least that has like a, you know, following. It just, the Abraham Lincoln thing, it's like at least wait for people to decide if it's even worth reading. I mean, what if it's like a flop as a book? Because you know that other one that came out, what was it, Sense and Sensibility and Sea Monsters? Yeah, I hear that's a total dog.
It looks bad. Yeah. I saw when I ordered Pride and Prejudice, I saw it on the Amazon page. I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm going to go ahead and skip that one.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the other one is apparently Neil Patrick Harris has been cast in The Smurfs.
He's actually going to be in the film.
That's what it sounds like, and here's the only reason this could possibly be cool is if he plays Gargamel.
Oh, yeah, or Asriel.
Oh, I guess.
Wouldn't that be cool? He's in a big cat suit the whole movie.
Oh, my gosh.
Danny DeVito should be Gargamel.
That's perfect.
That would be awesome.
Then have Asriel being taller than Gargamel. That's awesome.
I got to say, like, Neil Patrick Harris in the cast gives me a teeny bit of hope, though, for a Smurfs movie. I like Neil Patrick Harris.
Like, I don't like the Smurfs, but yeah.
So wait, so like, let me be very clear about this. So they're actually, it's going to be animated Smurfs.
In real
not
life
actors
people.
In blue face with little white hats.
Blue face.
Well, that's what it is. You know, like, is it going to be like Avatar, you know, but.
Yeah. No, I like, you said Birth of a Nation earlier.
Yeah, is it going to be like Birth of a Nation with Smurfs, you know, where it's like.
You got to stage a protest here against actors in blue face.
What were you going to say?
The Navi will protest or what?
Yeah, exactly.
No, will Ted Danson be wearing this?
Ted Danson.
Wow. Okay.
No, I was just going to say that I really like Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog. That's just really brilliant to me. So,
you're in the right place today.
Yes. Yeah. You are among your people.
Yes.
All right. Well, heck, should we just go ahead and take a quick break? And then, all right, let's come back. We will come back and do more. Talk about what's his name?
Ridley Scott.
Yeah, that one guy.
Thanks, Dave. Great show. At Jonja.net. That's JONJA.
we have everything to satisfy your sci-fi fan needs. If you look to start comparing... What do you mean there's no video? They're screen geeks. They don't have a screen? Well, how am I supposed to... I hired a Cylon to tell everyone about the discussions of sci-fi television movies past and present. I guess I won't be needing you. You can leave.
By your command.
I mean, come on, I had Nichelle Nichols beam in to talk about our long list of exclusive interviews, including Zachary Quinto, Amanda Tapping, and the crew of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Hailing frequencies are always open at JeanJay.net.
Never mind, Miss Nichols. Thanks for coming in. I don't believe this. Oh, great. Now here comes my special guest to tell people about JeanJay.net's Flash Arcade. Forget it, man. They can't even see you. Oh, well. Maybe everyone will find their way over to JeanJay.net to see and hear everything for themselves. Thanks for listening. Now back to Screen Geeks.
That's a major accomplishment for after 35 years of being a failed filmmaker. Lloyd Kaufman gets to be on ScreenGeeks.com.
And we're back to discuss Ridley Scott's Kingdom of Heaven. This is his second collaboration with, I always forget his name, Orlando Bloom. Sorry.
It's okay. I was going to say Russell Crowe.
He's just one of those actors.
So, yeah.
Legolas.
Exactly. Well, people forget this, but he...
Pretty elf.
He was actually in Black Hawk Down. That's the first time they ever worked together. I mean, he's completely... I don't remember him. I remember Ewan McGregor, and I remember Josh Hartnett, who was really good in that film. But otherwise, I don't even remember Orlando being in this movie. But
all right.
Kingdom of Heaven, there's a lot of ways to set us up. One being that Orlando Bloom at this point was one of the hottest actors in America because of The Lord of the Rings and because of...
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Thank you. The pirate movies, right. Yeah. So,
Pirates of the Caribbean, because pirates, totally.
Oh, that's right.
Kind of
yes. Yeah. Yes, that's right. Yeah. So, Bloom, like, this was 2005, and Bloom all of a sudden had these two prestigious leading roles in two big movies from two big directors, one being Cameron Crowe's Elizabethtown, which was a total flop. I like that film, too. Thank you.
One of my favorite movies. I love that movie. Yes.
That's a good film. And he's not bad in that film. Kingdom of Heaven, well, we'll talk about his performance in a little bit, but. This was a film that almost changed the nature of how Hollywood releases their summer movies, because the summer before, Hollywood released Shrek, the first Shrek sequel, and Spider-Man 2 in May. And it was so huge that the following summer, 2005, Hollywood thought they'd get a leg up and release like some of their biggest summer movies like the first week of May, and it was such a disaster. They released Kingdom of Heaven, and you know, which was it had such a small opening, even though it was number one. It was like clear after 1 week, it was gone. And then you remember this, Dave, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Good movie.
I like that movie.
It opened up at number one, but it made like $10 million its opening weekend. It was like an instant flop.
Well, part of that's because the movie was made for people who've read the book. If you ever read the book, you're screwed.
Absolutely.
And I love the book.
Yeah.
It was great.
And then another for literary watchers, XXX, State of the Union, also opened that weekend. Total flop, even though I honestly like it better than the first one. But
oh, the book was so much better.
So much better. Amazing book. But
XXX, State of the Union, based on the novel pushed by Seth.
But it
would have been an Oscar contender if that happened.
Kingdom of Heaven has an interesting history. It was supposed to be made back in the 90s. This was a pet project for decades. You guys might have heard about this. Paul Verhoeven was going to direct Arnold Schwarzenegger. They had been wanting to make it, and it was called Crusades when they were going to do it.
But, oh, okay.
Do you remember that? Yeah, they've been wanting to do this like ever since they did Total Recall. Can you imagine that? Arnold Schwarzenegger as a crusade? I'm here to tell you about Jesus. I mean, can you imagine that? They like tried to get that movie made for like decades, and it just...
Well, I'm guessing it didn't get made because it was a pretty big satire of religion. That's why I'm guessing it did. Is that true?
Oh, my understanding, it was going to be like a $200 million budget, like back in 1995, which was not going to happen. So they just, and plus they couldn't agree to like Schwarzenegger's salary and Verhoeven's salary, and plus how big it was going to be. So it just, it never was going to happen. So Kingdom of Heaven. The thing that's, I won't get too political about this, but the timing was interesting for this film, because one thing a lot of critics pointed out was this movie is about people justifying holy wars. Mm-hmm. People saying that God is telling us that it's okay to go in and fight because we're fighting God's cause. That kind of political rhetoric was going on in the White House while we were at war in Iraq during that time. So the film was seen as very timely. It was even seen that maybe Ridley Scott was making a comment about the Bush administration. Then, of course, you remember later that summer when Revenge of the Sith came out, and there's that line where Anakin goes, "You're either with us or against us," which is, you know, of course, something Bush very famously said. So everyone's like, oh, all these summer movies are commenting on politics. But... just taken as it is, Kingdom of Heaven. I'm kind of on the fence about this movie. And,
are you?
And you know, I'll tell you what. Like, I watched the director's cut this morning. You loaned me your director's cut. I saw this in the theater, and it was funny because, like, I watched the director's cut, which was very elegantly presented. Like, it has an overture, it has an intermission. I mean, it feels like the real. I mean, it really has
a true epic. Brief. Yeah.
It really does, yeah. And it always felt like a true epic to me. But I like that roadshow presentation he gives it. But even so, I still feel it has a lot of the same problems. For one, Bloom. For me, Bloom is a real problem. I like to quote something that John Landis said. Marty gave me this great book about Landis, and I love something that Landis said that really made me understand kind of my problem with this movie. Landis did this movie called Oscar with Sylvester Stallone.
I love that movie.
I like that movie too. But Landis is not happy with, he's still not happy with Stallone's performance in that movie. He said he wanted Al Pacino. He wanted someone who could hold the room. And he says that, you know, Stallone was great, but as much as he tried, he just couldn't hold the room. And that's how I felt about Bloom. He's a good actor. He's a perfectly capable, likable actor. But for the gravity of that role and how he had to carry the film, I just felt that he could not hold the screen with Jeremy Irons and Liam Neeson and the scene stealer for me, Edward Norton,
Absolutely.
Who is mesmerizing. Yeah. You don't see his face, and he is incredible in that movie. I think for me, Bloom is one of the biggest problems with the movie for me.
I think I like this movie in spite of Orlando Bloom. I think the supporting cast is so strong that I loved it. I love Edward Norton. I liked every single supporting character in this. And I don't know that I never really took it. I'd never heard about any of the religious implications of the commentary. I always took it as the other side of it, which was you have a guy on each side who's saying, you know, we don't need to try to kill each other. There's really no need to do this. And the forces trying to keep that from happening.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a very interesting struggle. I just really dug that.
Yeah, David Thewlis has a really good line in the movie. I really like, you remember this line where he says there's a huge difference between being religious and being holy. And he says, I want nothing to do with religion. I want everything to do with being holy. Spreading the love of God, not like forcing it on people and not, you know, butchering people if they disagree with you. It's a really good line that I think kind of sums up, you know, the whole rhetoric that Scott was trying to go with in the story sense. Even in the theater, though, the movie felt a little long to me. Even without the 3.5-hour cut that I watched this morning, it still felt kind of long to me. And I think I prefer the theatrical cut just because it feels a little tighter. The one thing I got to say I really liked about the director's cut is Liam Neeson actually has a role in the director's cut. In the film, it's not even a cameo. It's almost like special appearance by. He's like in the film so quickly, and he does the same kind of role that he would do in Batman Begins a few months later. You know, the mentor, and he shows him how to sword fight, and then he's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. What'd you think of this, Ethan?
Well, I prefer the director's cut because I'm not insane, but regarding Bloom, though, I agree he's not great and they could have gotten a better actor, but I do think his role is meant to be a little more low-key than, say, Maximus, for example. And I think the big difference between this and the theatrical cut is the Eva Green character. In the director's cut, she's a totally fleshed-out, interesting character. In the theatrical cut, she just does kind of things for no actual reason. And I saw it in the theater. I didn't mind it, but I was pretty young. Director's cut I saw when it came out, thought it was awesome. I honestly think if the director's cut had been the theatrical version, I think this movie would have been a big Oscar contender, and it certainly would have beaten that movie where Sandra Bullock falls down the stairs and is cured of racism. So, yeah, I like it.
Wow. All right, then. See, I haven't seen the theatrical cut, so I have no basis of comparison there.
Even so, I still feel the movie is really lacking. I mean, you mentioned Ava Green. She's solid in the movie. She really is. But what, theatrical cut or not, like it feels like the obligatory love interest no matter what. And as soon as the villain shows up, it's so obvious. He's like this mustache-twirling villain. His hair is all black. He's ha-ha. He's like laughing evilly, and he's taunting the hero. It's like, you know, it's going to be an hour before he gets his comeuppance of inevitably. But to me, it was so cartoonish, the villain. And like they didn't need to have the love story. Just it felt so injected. It really felt like at times they were really striving for that Braveheart feel, and I don't think this movie really needed that.
And I think part of that is go ahead, Ethan.
Dave, you go.
No, you go ahead, sir. I've been talking plenty already.
Okay. Well, I think correct me if I'm wrong here, I didn't actually have the time to rewatch the director's cut. It was rewatch the director's cut or watch Old Dogs twice, and I think I made the right decision. But wasn't a difference that in the theatrical cut, Ava Green's character didn't have a son, and in the director's cut, she has a son, and she has to make a big decision regarding him? Because I remember thinking that like made a humongous difference.
Well, that's in the theatrical version too.
I don't think it is though.
No, it is. I remember that.
I don't think she had a son in the
theatrical. Well, I don't know if it's a son. Is it her son, the one who has the same condition as the Edward Norton character without giving it away? And then yeah, she discovers it and she makes the ultimate sacrifice so that, you know,
yeah,
she can...
I'm like 95% sure none of that was in the theatrical cut, and she sort of, her character just went insane for no reason in the theatrical cut.
Well, I seem to remember seeing it 5 years ago, but, you know, kind of hazy.
We've got Ridley Scott on the phone. Ridley? No. He probably doesn't even know.
Do you think that the film would have been helped if they'd gotten a better lead?
Yeah. Immeasurably. And I'm not saying like Russell Crowe. It doesn't need to be some guy who needs to like shave five times a day. Just someone who, I don't know, just someone who's
less girl-like.
A little more compelling. I don't know about girl-like. It's not that Orlando Bloom is terrible. I mean, I liked him in Elizabethtown, even though I don't feel that's like one of his best performances, or maybe it is. I don't know. I mean, to go with an obvious choice, I mean, even someone like, I don't know, Johnny Depp, someone who's just a little more compelling and his journey's more compelling. With Bloom, I forget I was even watching a movie about his character. Like Jeremy Irons would show up, or like Edward Norton would show up, and I forget. Oh yeah, the blacksmith. That's the lead character in the film.
Yeah. I think the movie works in spite of Orlando Bloom. He did okay, but should have been a better actor.
It's a gorgeous film.
Seth Green.
I was gonna say Zac Efron, but you know.
I was gonna say Taylor Lautner, but yeah.
Oh, there it is.
Sure. So Taylor Lautner was five when this movie came out. So
yeah, he would have held the screen, could have just taken his shirt off, and
even at five,
I'm sure
he had abs when he was five.
Okay,
probably came out of the womb with abs. So
okay, let's you know, when we go to Taylor Lautner jokes, it means it's time to stop the topic. I'm just saying.
Well, you know what? I got to say the music to this film was gorgeous. I mean, even watching it today, like some of those, there's a scene where, I can't even describe it, where there's a woman waiting out in a wheat field for one of the knights to talk to her. And just like the way it was shot, the lens that was used, and the very subtle special effects used to give the film a specific feel and look. It's like, you know, it's just amazing that Ridley Scott can like convey such a poetic feel for even like a scene that lasts only like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
But who did the score again? It was
Randy Newman.
I'm a Nile, you're a Nile, we're in Jerusalem. Yeah, that'd be good.
Do you want me to look it up real quick?
I think is it Harry Gregson? Well, the movie's right there.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
What you mean? Look at the actual credits. That's crazy talk. Blah blah blah. Doesn't where is it? Harry Gregson.
Harry Gregson Williams. Or, yeah, well done, yeah, sir. Yeah, beautiful score. And there's
disturbing that you remembered that.
Well, okay. No, I like the composer. He also there's a bit of the music that they take from Hannibal, the another Ridley Scott movie where they use that opera, and it's the scene where it's Edward Norton's last scene, and it's such a beautiful piece of music. It just honestly chokes me up whenever I hear it, and it's in there. Yeah, it's a gorgeous soundtrack, and you know there's the overture. The overture, which, you know, you get a good sense of the music, too. So, I mean, you know, Ethan's right. If you're going to see this movie in any way, you should probably see the director's cut. But I don't know. I was just – it felt long to me even in theaters, too. It feels like an overlong movie to me. But
and I feel like a jerk because, like, I haven't let you guys talk at all, have we?
Oh, no. I got to be quicker with you guys. That's all.
What did you think of the – what do you think of the film?
I didn't see it, so I can't contribute anything.
Fair enough. I haven't seen it.
Just wisecracking over here.
That's okay. You do know that Randy Newman wrote the music, so.
Yes. Is he nominated again this year? Twice?
For The Princess and the Frog.
Oh, thank goodness.
One of those songs was good.
But not as Crazy Heart.
No. It's amazing that, I mean, Crazy Heart has to win it because it's the only good song that's up for this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
They should just give him an honorary Oscar every year for I Love L.A., even though that song wasn't in the movie.
Hey, you know he'll be up for it this year with Toy Story 3.
Actually, wait, it was an Escape from L.A., even though it wasn't written for the movie. It should have best song that year, yeah.
Well, you know, it was also in The Naked Gun.
Wow.
Double Oscar.
There you go. Wow. Okay.
Do you remember that? It's like the best scene in the movie. It's the baseball scene.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
All right, so we were talking about Kingdom of Heaven, but somehow
I think we're done with that now. Yeah. What are we talking about next week?
No idea. What else? We're also going to look at Scott's. Want to look at Someone to Watch Over Me?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, we'll look at that one.
Cool. And then we're going to wrap it up with another movie.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
Cool. All right. Well, let's go ahead and talk about what's hitting theaters this weekend.
This weekend, you've got the long-delayed, in fact, 2 years delayed, Paul Greengrass thriller with Matt Damon.
Dang it. How did I not be prepared for...
Sorry.
Damon.
Okay.
Let's try that again. This is a film that came out a couple years ago. It's called Green Zone, and it stars...
Matt Damon.
Beautiful, Dave. It's a good film. Supposedly, the views have been really mixed, even though it's a film called The Green Zone. It stars...
Matt Damon.
Nice. We're done for the month. Also opening this weekend, Robert Pattinson. I hope this movie sinks like a stone. Remember Me? No, we don't. Also opening.
Have you guys heard the ending of that movie?
Yes.
Oh, please spoil it. What is it?
Okay.
Here's the thing. Okay, I'll let you. Yeah, no, you go ahead and do it, Ethan. Then I'm going to have a joke for you afterwards.
Okay. Spoilers for Remember Me.
For like another minute or minute and a half, yeah.
Robert Pattinson dies in 9/11 at the end.
Nah, really?
Yes, he's calling her saying, I love you, and you see the plane flying in the background.
Oh my God. Oh, it's like that Uwe Boll film.
That's what I was going to say. It's like Postal. The opening to Postal is the other end of that conversation. Yeah.
Wow. Holy crap. America, do not see this movie, please.
I want to go just to laugh really hard because that's just the most bad taste ending.
I would
ever.
Sneak in to see it or I'll borrow it from the library, but I'm not supporting that.
Oh, no.
That's ridiculous.
I want to see Robert
what a
Pattinson
cheap way to like choke,
the
get the tears going.
What was that?
I want to see Robert Pattinson die as much as the next person, but not in that.
9/11?
No.
My gosh.
Too soon.
I guess Taylor Lautner's next starring vehicle, he'll be in Haiti and he'll be like, oh, I feel the ground trembling.
So, okay, when you heard this, Ethan, did you laugh when you heard the spoiler?
The Levy
spoiler. I was kind of like, no, that's not real. That's not real.
Is there a chance this is a plant? Or I mean, this has been confirmed. Like people have seen the movie, and
I heard it from someone else. And Ethan's the second person I've heard say this. So.
Well, I trust you guys. I can't believe that. That is appalling. Appalling.
It's such phenomenally bad taste.
Wow.
Like that's something you expect to see in you know the next epic movie or something.
Right. Right. But yeah, or like a Michael Bay film, but not like. You know, the spin-off vehicle for the star of Twilight.
It's like the end of Message in a Bottle, just without the national catastrophe happening.
Right, yeah. Right. Man, that's...
If Trey Parker and Matt Stone did it, though, it would be hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Well, I hope the South Park guys jump on that.
Oh,
that's
yeah, they will. Yeah, they will. All right.
Wow. I'm appalled. I'm genuinely pissed off right now. She's out of my league.
Which looks interesting.
It gets a laugh whenever they show the trailer in the theater, but I don't know. Can that guy carry a movie?
I don't know. That's the question.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because like we know Paul Rudd can, we know Jason Segel can, but can this guy like
Jay Bruchemel?
Can't even remember his name.
Yeah, I can't remember it either.
I think it's like Jay Bruchemel or something. Or,
yeah, right. Yeah, the Apatow
guy.
Got
the tattoo of the leaf. On right.
He wants to rear your child. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Don't go in there.
Yeah, there you, his career highlights right there. Yeah. So
there you are.
Let's see if this new one works. Then
and
finally,
Tropic Thunder.
And then that's right.
He
that's right.
Tropic
that's
Thunder.
Right.
He was in the lead on Undeclared as well. So.
Oh, Undeclared.
Oh, yeah, I just started watching that.
It's a good show.
Yeah, that's a good show.
He had a very small role in Almost Famous. He was like freaking out about
it. He was in $1 Million Baby as well.
Really?
He was a retarded guy who was getting beaten up, and Morgan Freeman beats the crap out of the guy who was taunting him.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Wow, this guy's got an amazing filmography.
This is
he's starting to get like
Jay
a character. Yeah. Yeah, this is the Jay Baruchel special episode now.
Man,
this is
the most
underrated actor ever.
Isn't it an Eastwood movie? I didn't know.
Yeah. All right. What's hitting DVD next week?
Well, fine. I'm sorry. The last one. Sorry. One more. Our Family Wedding with America Ferrera. And also that comedian that we hate is in it. What's his name? The one who steals everybody else's jokes and made fun of him.
Carlos Mencia. Carlos Mencia, yes, when they did the funniest joke of all time on South Park, yes.
That's right. One of the best episodes of South Park.
That was great.
Yep. That's it.
All right, and then DVD next week.
DVD next week. The aforementioned The Twilight Saga, New Moon.
Yippee. On you a 1-disc, 2-disc, and Blu-ray.
Yeah.
You know who's not in that movie?
Oh, that's no. Didn't have me ready.
Wait, set that up again. Set that up again, Marty.
I'm going to have to edit this episode,
hey,
actually.
Dave. Hey, you know who's not in that movie?
Who?
Ben Affleck?
Matt Damon.
Wow. Bring the derailing.
Our longtime listeners are like, it's not funny anymore, guys.
You know, this isn't as bad as there's an episode of like Geek Radio Daily where every time you say geekradiodaily.com, there's a bell that rings.
Oh, ding. Yeah,
and
that.
Someone said the name geekradiodaily.com like 20 times in a voice, in an email. So they played the bell. Like, they almost broke the bell after that email. Yeah. We're hitting that point.
All right. Well, Dave and I saw this one, Disney's The Princess and the Frog.
I like
it's okay.
It.
Yeah. Not bad.
Yeah. Single disc, one disc Blu-ray, combo Blu-ray, DVD. Yeah. They're,
yeah.
Disney's releasing the crap out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very likable.
Yeah. It's decent. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's.
I hated it a lot less than I expected.
I think I liked it a little more than you, but, yeah. You know, it's. I don't know. Like, what do you think? Like, better than Oliver and Company or on that?
Man, you know, I loved me some Oliver and Company. But that was when I was a kid. You know, the best thing about this is, Mommy, what just happened? Oh, it's okay, son. He just got dragged to the pits of hell. That's the best part about The Princess and the Frog, yeah.
I got to say, it's got one of the most shocking death scenes of the year.
Yeah.
That's a minor spoiler, but I got to say, I was kind of broken up about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The villain was awesome.
The villain was pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Like one of the coolest villains I've seen in a while.
Yeah. And it had some good songs, too. A few of the songs I thought were pretty good.
Yeah.
By who? Who are these songs by?
Randy Newman.
Randy Newman.
You got a friend in me.
If I knew this was happening, I would have popped
Looks
up the
like
Paul and Storm.
Got a perfect day.
I love to see you smile.
I love LA.
Okay. You gotta make up your mind.
I'm so scared right now. Okay.
All right. Also opening, this film opened on Thanksgiving for some bizarre reason. Ninja Assassin, which I heard was really lousy, like really gory and really not that good.
Okay.
Yeah.
I figure I'll rent it on Netflix.
Ninja Assassin. There you go. This one was creepy, but really dopey. Mila Jovovich in The Fourth Kind.
I've heard such awful things about this.
Yeah, I got to say, like, parts of it really creep me out, but it's so silly. Like, I wanted to, like, have, like, a Paranormal Activity experience watching it, but I couldn't because I couldn't get around how incredibly campy it was.
So is this the kind of movie that they held on to trying to figure out a good time to release it, and then Paranormal Activity dropped, and they're like, oh, let's drop it now.
Yeah, and they should have waited till like, January.
Fair enough.
Yeah. South Park season 13.
Woohoo!
Very nice. Armored with Matt Dillon and Lawrence Fishburne.
Bad. Was that in theaters?
It was in theaters, yeah.
For like 2 weeks and then...
Yeah. If 2 weeks, yeah. Did you hear about the Morgans? No, we didn't.
Nope.
Breaking Bad, the complete second season, and then Monk season 8, and we got two more. Astro Boy with the voice of Nicolas Cage, which I heard wasn't very good.
Yeah.
Now I want to see that.
And then finally, the Vengeance trilogy.
Yes. Good and our stuff. Crap title of the week.
Crap title of the week. Oh, that's right. Wow. Yanni live, the concert event.
You know, you brought up Nicolas Cage. I totally forgot that they showed us like every 3D trailer before Alice in Wonderland, which they weren't supposed to do. But they showed the Sorcerer's Apprentice trailer. Looks so bad. See, bringing back the Jay Baruchel thing. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
Jay Baruchel again. That's his name, Jay Baruchel. Okay.
Yeah. Morning, yeah, like, today.
God, he's everywhere now.
He's like Joshua Jackson.
He'll never get old.
Okay. Yeah, Nicolas Cage looks so bad in that movie. Like, it just, he needs a lucky crack pipe and then he'll be good to go in every movie he does from now on.
You know, that film was just so good, honestly. I think you're going to love it maybe more the second time you see it. Like, that film for me, just it's gold the whole way.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
It really is. No, Herzog made a special movie. It's a parody of the film noir, but it's at the same time, it is, there's no way to predict what's going to happen in that film. And it's just like, it is narrative proof. It just goes on its own direction. I love it. It's beautiful. I got to say this really quick because I don't get to talk about Yanni very much in this show.
Why not?
You know, I always think of this because, like, when I was in college, we had the chance to name our dorm rooms, like, you know, whatever our dorm was called. Like, we would have a meeting and we would establish what our dorm room would be called. And the name of my dorm, and it's still called this, if you go to my university, why would you? But if you did, it's called The Shelter, because like we took a vote and we named it. But the close runner-up, because somebody who was incredibly stoned came up with this, it almost was called, my dorm room was almost called Yanni Live at the Acropolis.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm glad Ethan found that was funny.
That was wrong.
I just wanted to jump in.
What school was this?
This was CCU in Lakewood. I'm not going to tell you what the CCU stands for. But yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
About naming your dorms and everything. I work at an insurance company, and we work in cubicles, but it's a big cubicle. So there's four people in it, and you all get your own corner. So it's called a quad. And we named our quad Quad Ramrod.
Quad Ramrod. That's pretty cool.
And we don't have the same people there that we did in the beginning, unfortunately, but one of the people who was there for a while, he was really cool. His name was Sean. We'd tease each other all the time. Like, he'd be on the phone, I'd be leaning over. I was like, say Quad Ramrod. Say Quad Ramrod. Say it. And he had the word, you didn't say it. He's like, oh, I didn't say it. So.
Quad Ram. Was it named after the wrestler or?
No, it's from Super Troopers.
Oh, Super Troopers, man. Yeah.
That's where it's from.
Nice. Cool. Well, we have no feedback this week. It's all good, though.
Oh. I think our listeners have abandoned us.
No, not at all. It's all good. If you want to shoot us an email, you
can bring them in.
Because I'm here.
Yeah. No. You know what? This is guns.
When I get back to LA, I'll listen to the show.
You know, nothing could top the hottest women in cinema.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Wait, Marty, would you say you love LA?
Oh.
I love LA. No, we love it.
Wow. That was like crossed with Bruce Springsteen. That's the best part of that.
With a little Tom Waits.
Yes. All right. If you want to shoot us an email, shoot us one at podcast Dave, Barry, Ethan, or Melissa, all at screengeeks.com. We are coming. Starfest is like 4 weeks away.
Yeah.
And the guest announcements are coming fast and quick, and they're getting
good.
You
didn't want to say Fast and Furious, did you?
No, I didn't. No, I wasn't going to do that. I'm not going there. Probably here's the thing. We're going to try to talk to as many of these people as we can. We ask, they can say no. So who knows who we get to talk to. We've got Christopher Judge, who played Teal'c on Stargate SG-1. Okay, I never watched the show. It's all good. Mm. We've got Marina Sirtis, who played Counselor Troi on Star Trek Next Generation.
She's a cool cat. I've seen her at Starfest. She's great.
Yes, that could be a lot of fun. We've got Tim Rose, who was Admiral Ackbar.
It's
a trap.
Yes.
Nice.
Although, more interestingly, he was one of the puppeteers on Return to Oz for TikTok, and he was one of the Howard the Duck puppeteers as well.
Wow, that's just...
So I'm hoping
right
we get
there,
to talk
like
to him.
Right there, he's like a god to me now. That's
yes,
amazing.
Yes, yes. We've also got Gary Lockwood from 2001.
Wow.
Is coming out.
That's
very cool.
Amazing.
Yes. And then the biggest name we've got so far is Summer Glau.
Summer Glau.
From Firefly and Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles. So hopefully we'll get to talk to as many of these people as possible. That's There's fun. A couple more in the works. One I'm really hoping happens, but we'll see if that works out or not.
I met Gary Lockwood in the year 2001. He came to Starfest with Keira Dulé, the other star of that film. And
really?
He's a cool guy.
Very cool. Yeah. I didn't know that he came out before. Sweet. All right. Well, until next week, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
This is Marty.
Marty.
Elise.
Thanks for coming, guys.
Yay.
Love LA.
Matt Damon.